Mom said, "Ready."
That's fine. Okay, we're back.
That was a do-over. Okay.
That's what happened.
Yeah, it is.
That's why I said what I said, how I said it.
Okie dokie then. Okay, so
I'm alive
good.
And well.
Alive and well. Alive and ticking?
No, no time bomb happening here.
Thank God.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure everyone dies, but...
Wow.
I'm sure everyone dies, except for the vampires and the Mothman and all the things. Those don't die.
They do not die.
Bigfoot never found his remains.
Nope.
So he can't die.
Nope. Loch Ness Monster
never found Nessie's remains.
Although they do think that she died, but
they also don't think she was really real.
She fucking was real. I'm not going to have this conversation right now.
You need to do an episode on the Loch Ness Monster.
She was fucking real.
That's like one of your passions in life.
It is. I wish I could find my high school research paper, but I'm pretty sure I probably don't have it anymore.
I don't know about that. You might.
I don't.
Y'all should see the storage room in the basement. My mom said to me one day, she goes, "You know, the only friend out of the goodness of their heart that's going to help you in this house after we pass away is your friend Hannah." I said, "I don't think Hannah's coming to help." I said, "I think I'm just going to have to burn this place down."
That's fair.
With all my dad's fucking fireplaces everywhere.
It'll be real easy my to burn mom's, down.
My mom's high school research papers in the basement and her yearbooks where she has people written across people's faces. Bitch. Devil horns. Mustaches. Like, you name it. And my mom drew it in her yearbook on top of people's faces.
That's why I needed to keep it.
Although I did force my mom to keep all of the antique family pictures because I love them and they're going to go up when it's my house one day.
Cool. And we were talking to you the other day about how we used to have this really cute family picture at the...
Oh my gosh!
In the front
Dad.
Hall, like in the foyer.
I know you're going to listen to this and you should know how bad this hurt my feelings.
Although that's the picture where you think Dad's leg is your leg and you think you have a giant fucking leg. And I think we've already talked about that, so I'm not going to talk about that again. But that literally made me pee my pants when Daphne said, "Why is my leg so big?" I'm like, "That's your dad's leg."
We're wearing the same color jeans. My dad doesn't wear jeans. So no. I was like, "What happened to his legs?"
But anyway, so we gave him a picture of Walt Disney that has an autograph.
It's like a newspaper, like a giant newspaper.
No, it's draft paper.
Like, oh, it's draft
like
paper.
Drawing paper.
But isn't there like an article on there?
No, it's literally just a picture of Walt Disney. And then underneath it on draft paper, it has his signature.
There's no more words on there?
I don't think so.
I think there are. I think there's like a newspaper clipping.
I don't
in it too.
Maybe. I don't know. But
anyway, it's like a big shadow box with Walt Disney and his autograph.
Yeah.
And where the family picture used to hang right when you walk in our house. It's now a small Disney and his signature. It's like, "Cool, Dad. Okay, tell us how you really feel."
Right.
He's like, "Yeah, I'd rather walk in every day and look at this and these bitches."
Basically. And the family so pictures in the garage. My fucking
kid and her abnormally large leg.
Okay. We better stop.
Okay.
People tune out.
Okay.
Tune
What's
out,
your
tune
disturbing in? Fact?
My disturbing fact is about the Karni Mata Temple in Deshnoke, Rajasthan, India. Have you heard of this?
No.
Like, well, the fact that you can't fucking say it, I might have heard of it if you could say it properly. Once you get into it, if I recognize any of the other words, I may have heard it.
Right. The hesitation in my voice went, no.
No.
But you said Karni, and that's when I was like, I've heard of the Karnis.
So this temple is one of the most unusual and fascinating temples in the world, and it is often called...
I wouldn't know. You can't say it.
It's often called the Temple of the Rats. Have you heard
of
this?
Ew, no. Why would you... Ew, why?
I told you. You said, "Is this going to make me sick?" I said, "No, but the next one might." So this is the one that might make you sick.
Why would you do this to me?
So this temple...
She loves to torture me with rodents.
I was just looking for something fucking disturbing, and I have to do this.
Rodent torture.
Okay, so this...
Although the Dumbo rats, I think they're called Dumbo rats, because they look like Dumbo, like not actually look like Dumbo, but they have giant ears.
Mm-hmm.
Are... so cute. I'm like, okay, exposure therapy was one of those. I could probably get through it.
Get down with that.
Yeah, that is like the cutest tiny little rodent-like creature. It is a rodent. It's not rodent-like. It's a rodent creature ever. And I hate rodents. We don't need to keep going on about the rodents.
I think we've heard.
I think everyone has heard about how Daphne hates rodents. That's what the other day I was telling my friend. I saw a hawk swoop up a mouse and was watching it eat it.
You told me.
I was also telling Inanna.
Like, I am your friend, but.
I was also telling Inanna. Thank you. Okay. Anyway, moving along. And she was like, oh, my gosh, that's so sad. I was like, yeah, but it's a circle of life. She goes, yeah, but I think you were only happy because it was a mouse. I was like, no, I sent it healing vibes. I don't want its soul to suffer. I was like, but it is the circle of life. And yes, I felt better about watching it than watching it eat like a bird or a squirrel or something else that I like.
Food chain.
But yeah, it's the circle of life. It's the food chain.
Yep, it is. You're not wrong.
Okay, sorry. Temple of Rats.
Okay, Temple of Rats. So the Karni Mata is a revered Hindu sage who's believed to be an incarnation of the goddess Durga. So that's what this temple is. It's dedicated to.
Okay, the goddess of Turnba?
The goddess of Durga.
Durga.
The temple is home to 25,000 plus rats known as Kabas, and they're considered sacred. Devotees believe that these rats...
I could get down with a sacred rat.
Devotees believe that these are reincarnated ancestors of Karni Mata's followers. Visitors walk barefoot inside. I could not do that.
Oh, fuck no.
And is
I mean, keep me away from there, but I could get down with the fact that they're sacred. Like, I won't set up mouse traps since they're sacred.
good plan on your part. And it's considered good luck if a rat runs over your feet, which also... I wouldn't think that's good luck. That would freak me out.
Yeah, that would freak me right the fuck on out. I think I'd rather just
not
never go on Fear Factor or anything of the sort.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because that would absolutely be something that would be given to me. And it's like,
totally.
Please don't.
Right. We go on Fear Factor and they've listened to the podcast and yours is all rodents and mine's all maggots.
I know, right? Although I had a maggot moment the other day watching something. It wasn't in my own personal life. I was watching something and I was like, okay, I can get it. I get why my mom hates them. I understand it now.
Oh, God, they're so gross. And they stink.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they eat decomposing things. Mm-hmm. When gross. You're putting dead things in your body, of course you're going to stink. You're excreting extra death. Like... Death part one, their shit is death part two.
It's the final destination.
Yeah.
Basically. So visitors walk barefoot inside and it's considered good luck if a rat runs over your feet. Seeing a rare white rat is believed to bring special blessings because all the rats in there, did I say they were black? They're all black.
No.
So they're all black rats. And then.
That makes it even worse.
Occasionally there will be a white one. So like an albino rat.
I don't like albino rats.
Well, it's good luck. It's believed to bring special blessings.
Okay, I'm so glad that I'll never have to experience it, though. I want to go to India, like, so bad, but I'll just stay away from the Temple of Rats.
Okay, even though they're souls of the faithful?
I don't doubt it, but my respect is not going there.
Okay.
I pay my respects by staying way the fuck away because okay. I wouldn't be comfortable in there.
So devotees bring milk, sweets, and other grains to the rats, and the food nibbled by the rats is considered prasad, which means blessed food. So I don't know if that they give it to them and then the rats eat it and then they're like, okay, now it's blessed, so I'm gonna eat it. I'm not really sure on that. So killing
a rat. They may be sacred, but they're still rats.
Killing a rat, even accidentally, requires replacing it with a silver or gold replica. So no one freaks out. No one panics. Instead, when you enter the temple, it is complete reverence and a quiet understanding that this place blurs the line between the human and the divine, where even the smallest creatures are part of something eternal. So I think that's very beautiful.
I love the messaging behind all of it. It's all amazing. Like the messaging behind it. Beautiful. Perfect. Great. I love it. It's just the rat thing.
It's just the rat part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The rat. That's just throwing me, man.
I'm sorry. Okay.
But well, like if they were like cat, I mean, it would stink, but I would be okay with that.
I don't know. A building filled with 25,000 plus cats might also freak me out a lot.
Yeah.
I think anything that's 25,000 plus.
It's like walking in the house with the Frenchies.
Yes. Or going to a Bronco game.
Same thing. Yep. No, I think some things I could get behind, like the butterfly pavilion.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Love that.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Oh, shit. I accidentally touched something.
Mom.
Daphne.
Stop touching things.
Okay. Untouched.
Untouched. Okay. We're not going to pause. Nothing's going to happen in this episode unless you have questions that I have to Google, which I tried to do my best to fill in all the blanks I could think of that you would ask questions about.
Totally. Totally so, get that. Okay. Sounds a stubby in.
Okay.
Proceed.
Okay. This is the story of
a girl who cried a river.
This is the story of a girl
who cried a river and drowned the whole world.
Well, she looks so sad and lonely there. I absolutely love her when she smiles. Please take all of that out. My voice is so not flattering for anyone.
Oh, yeah. We'll be saying Snoop Dogg, California in my episode.
Snoop Dogg.
And I left that in, so.
Oh, wonderful.
Yay.
Right, I bet I just sound absolutely delicious.
You sound better than me.
Oh, that's good.
She chokes. Oh, great. Because you sound like shit. So I sound like just slightly above shit.
Yay. Okay. Right. Okay. Harm Drenth.
What? Bless you. Like, what?
He was born on November 17th.
What?
Harm Drenth.
Okay, you just jumped right in and it sounded like you were going to spit something
out. Well, I said this is the story of, then we sang.
Yeah, you should have went back to that, maybe.
Okay. Harm Drenth, he was born November
17th, 1982. 1982? 1892. Okay,
because
I'm like, I thought you said this was old.
I'm sorry, I'm dyslexic.
Oh, yeah, it's like 5 years older than me. It's like 1992. It's so old.
Yeah, except for you can't do fucking math.
6 years? My bad. Carry the one. I only have 5 fingers. There's only so much math I can do. I mean, I've... But only 5 on one hand, and I was holding something in my other
hand. Just really digging yourself a digger hole.
All right.
Digging yourself a deeper hole. Recenter, rezone. We're talking about murder. Stop laughing, you morbid fucker.
Get a fresh piece of focus, neurogum.
Harm Drenth. He was born on November 17th, 1892. As I almost said, 1982. And 1982 was also...
No, you said... You said 1982.
Okay. And I definitely was born in the 90s, so...
Yeah, my bad.
You have real bad math skills.
Told you. Only 5 fingers on one hand. Focus.
Okay.
Maybe we shouldn't record 2 episodes at once. This is going south real quick.
Okay, he was born in Breda, Netherlands. It doesn't matter. He was born in the 1890s.
Okay.
He had an older sister. And when he was 11, his parents tried for another baby, but the baby was stillborn.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah. In early 1910, he was in trouble a lot in his life, but in early 1910 specifically, he was in trouble a lot. So that April, his parents were like, get the fuck out of here. They put him on a ship to the United States with a bunch of families that they knew. And so they're like, they wanted him to be working independently on a farm with a bunch of people that he knew. And he's 18, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I guess he's 17 when he leaves, when he gets shipped off, but... Okay.
By the time he gets here, he's 18 because it's a long ass fucking boat ride.
Well, over the course of, yes, okay. His life, he turned 18. Anyway, so they put him on a boat with the Baker family. He moved out here. He lived in Iowa. So he worked on this farm, but he always left complaining because at this point, then he was 18. And he was like, I hate being told what to do. I'm 18. I know everything. I hate my life.
I'm 18. I know everything.
Mike McClung, a coordinator at the All Center for Local History and Genealogy in Morgantown in North Carolina, said, quote, when he got here, he began stealing liquor and automobiles and getting immediately in trouble with the law.
Awesome.
Yeah, so she's just a bad kid. About a year later, his parents arrived in the U.S. Then shortly after, he was arrested for stealing booze. The Drenth family started to, like, Americanize themselves. And so he began going by Herman.
Okay, so his name is Herb space Drenth.
Or Harm.
Harm space Drenth.
Yes, Harm Drenth.
Okay, because you said it so quick, you're like, Harm Drenth. I'm like, his whole name is Harm Drenth?
Yes, Harm Drenth.
Okay, I'm getting it now because you said the Drenth family. So that's when I was like, oh, wait, his first name isn't Harm Drenth.
He would have had a last name then.
Not necessarily. Look at Cher. Look at Madonna.
Yeah, they have names, though. They just chose Cher and Madonna.
And Sting.
Right?
Yeah.
I was about to say, and Michael Jackson, boy.
The smart one over here.
Takes two to tango.
True.
Anyway, okay. His older sister then moved out there too with her family. She had a husband and a kid. Then his parents and his sister in 1917 decided to move 250 miles north of their Dutch community that they lived in Iowa and buy 40 acres of land.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's kind of like, So I think he goes with them, but he lives more independently.
On the 40 acres or on his own?
On his own.
Okay.
But I think because he goes to Madison.
Wisconsin?
Yeah. And I think that that is about that distance.
Okay.
Well, I don't know, I guess, exactly where he was at in Iowa, but it's north of Iowa.
Okay.
Is Wisconsin. So.
I like how you call it Iowa.
Iowa. Iowa.
I went to Iowa or Iowa.
Whatever. Nobody's even from there anyway. At 26 years old, actually, as I know a lot of people from there. That's why, because they all came here. At 26 years old, he started going by Harry Powers.
Not Harry Potter.
Nope. So it's funny. Every time I was Googling, it was like Harry Potter. I was like, nope, Harry Powers, nope. Not Harry Potter.
Nope, nope, nope. You don't always know what you're talking about, Google.
Right? Trying to autofill it. I'm like, the real story of it's like Harry Potter. Nope. So he married some 22-year-old girl, moved to Madison. They lived in a hotel and had a dog. So he's 26, right? At this, uh-huh. And then he 1919, he's 27. They were both arrested for car theft. And I don't know why they like let her out.
Maybe because they have a dog. She has to feed the dog.
I don't know, but they let her out. Okay. And then in June, she came to visit him and she brought him some tools to escape.
Jesus.
And then the following day on June 28th in 1919, he and his cellmate, Walter Bartowski, escaped from jail.
Okay. She brought him some tools. They didn't pat her down.
No. I mean, it was 1919.
Still.
Right.
Like, she just chopped
the chainsaw in her chest.
Right.
I don't know what happened to that wife, but 2 years passed. There's another girl. He's like madly in love with her. Her name was Rose Strickland, and she was 20 and he was 28. He was 28. And then she married another guy.
Oh.
And so he broke into their house and stole a bunch of their stuff and tried to burn down their house.
Wow.
But luckily the fire didn't really catch and it was really small. And then he was arrested again and convicted of this and probably the car theft too.
That's probably super stable.
In 1921.
I love you. I'm going to burn you down.
Yeah. I love you. I'm going to burn your house down. Fuck her. She married someone else. So he's like, fuck you, bitch.
Yeah.
He served 15 months in Wisconsin State Prison and was released on October 11th, 1922. After his release, he booked it out of town and he never saw anyone in his family ever again or anyone like from his past life, except
that's not true.
The wife. I don't know what happens with the wife.
He only had the one wife.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know what happens really with the wife because she pops back up a little bit down.
Okay.
Like in like five bullet points down, I mean, like real soon. But yeah, I don't really know. I don't know what happened with them. There wasn't a lot of clear answers. Anyway, we know along his journey some of the way, like he's kind of taking a slow road trip where he's going to wind up in West Virginia. So we know at some point he winds up in West Virginia in 1926.
Okay.
But he's
1922 to 1926.
Journeying along.
Yes.
So along the way, he begins using the services of matrimonial agencies to reach out to widows.
I don't like where this is headed.
So at age 31, he met and married Mrs. Allie Province, who was 50. And he went under the alias of Joseph Gildo at this point. Gildow.
Okay.
He then put sleeping powder into her coffee and robbed her and ran off. And she tried to get a warrant. And she was like, you know, called the police, whatever. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't find him and arrest him because, like I said, he was like on the move at this point.
And he was going under an alias.
Yeah. And later that year, in August of 1924, we know he's in Minnesota and in Ohio this year. Mm-hmm. And then this is confusing again because of this table I found about his early life. Like the crimes are really the only thing that are very publicized online. Like it's kind of hard to find timelines elsewhere. But then I found this one timeline.
.edu.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Radford.edu has a timeline. So it says that he and Mrs. Powers on that website. Anyway, got back together. Or they never broke up and she was like just following him and hanging back, whatever was going on, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they were arrested for grand larceny and of a garage that was in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And their friends posted their bond. Then again, under the same alias of Joseph Gildow, however you want to say it. He was 32 in Ohio and he was arrested for selling stuff that looked stolen. Okay. And like, obviously, we know it was. Mm-hmm. So he's just really right. Then 5 months later, in April of 1925, under the same alias, he was arrested again for stealing money and jewelry from Miss Lena Fellows, who he proposed to and promised to elope with.
Is it from that same matrimonial?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's using them to seek people out.
Okay. Vulnerable widows.
Uh-huh. Vulnerable people.
Mm-hmm.
Also, he's fugly. Like, really, really, really fugly.
So personality and looks are a 1 out of 10.
Not even.
Okay. A -6 out of 10.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know how he's pulling these ladies, but...
Personality, charm.
Yeah.
Lies.
He must have been a hell of a... I have it right here. He must have been a hell of a liar and a schmoozer. Then he's arrested again for stealing vacuums.
Okay, that's random.
So this is when the timelines get a little iffy here. So I shifted over to more publicized timelines.
Okay.
From that EDU what timeline.
Mm-hmm.
So he's in West Virginia, 1926. Like I said, we know like from that in that 4-year time frame, he's like journeying down there, but being a scumbag along the way.
Right. He's meandering.
Yeah.
Meandering, but being busy being a piece of shit.
Yes. Okay. So he settles down in Clarksburg, where he worked as a door-to-door vacuum salesman.
Okay.
Which I literally put in my notes. Who even knew this was a thing?
Oh my God, it was totally a thing. It was even a thing like, bleh, I'm choking, like 30 years ago. People try to sell these fucking Hoover vacuums that were like...
He didn't work for Hoover. He worked for a different company.
That were, I don't know. Here, this is a $2,000 vacuum. You'll never have to buy another vacuum. I just didn't put it in my notes. As you live.
Which, the Eureka?
Oh, yep. There was
that was the one he worked for, I think.
Yeah. No, totally fine. But yeah, no, it's a thing. Little youngin'.
It was just ironic because then, you know, like before he's arrested for stealing vacuums, or maybe he was stealing them from his work. I don't know. He probably was stealing them from his work. Like definitely, probably.
But not probably, maybe, but definitely, probably.
Yeah. In 1927, he married Luella Strother, who went by Lulu. He found her ad in a Lonely Heart section of a newspaper, and the rest is history. They're married, whatever. Lulu was born in July of 1886 in West Virginia. She was a widow. She had her own farm property in Quiet Dell, and she owned a grocery store in Clarksburg.
So she's doing pretty well for herself.
Yeah. Remember the other day when I told you I laughed so fucking hard and I couldn't tell you one of the reasons why I was laughing so fucking hard?
Mm-hmm.
Lulu called him her Dolly Dimple Sugar Lump.
That's disgusting.
It made me laugh so hard when I read that. I was like, I wouldn't call someone my Dolly Dimple Sugar Lump.
I wouldn't. Not somebody that you want to keep around.
He moved in with her and her sister, Eva Bell, something.
Okay.
And their mother. But soon after the mother passed away, I don't think that he was involved in the mother's death.
I'm like,
Maybe he was. I don't know. But I just don't think that he was.
Sleuthing,
I think that
by Daphne says.
Well,
that.
I think that there would have been more speculation online if it
oh,
was.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
And so I didn't see any speculation that he was involved in
Probably
it.
Probably not then.
But he saw this as an opportunity to gain control over the situation. So apparently the situation was just like too damn good. So he went to his wife and his sister-in-law and was like, hey, sign over all of this to me, baby. Everything should be in a man's name. I've got this. Don't worry about it.
I'm your dimple something.
Dolly Dimple Sugar Lump. Yes. I'm your Dolly Dimple Sugar Lump. Sign it all the way to me. Some reports say that they did. Others say that they didn't. Or if they did, it like wasn't notarized. I don't know.
It wasn't official.
Yeah. Anyway, he began building a concrete garage on the property. He designed it himself so he could pull his car into it. And there's a heavy trap door that lifts and goes down the stairs into 4 soundproof concrete rooms.
That doesn't sound shady.
Not at all. So if you think you know where this is going, you don't, because it gets even crazier. So we're entering like the Great Depression, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's just hard because he started preying on, you know, vulnerable populations.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, women who felt like they needed a man, like we're talking, like in your case, it's taboo times, like to not have a man.
Oh, in my case that I covered.
Not in your case in life, you have a man.
Yeah. Nor is it taboo for me not to have one.
Right. Yes. In your case, you covered your Georgia tan.
Yes.
That it was just taboo, like all this taboo stuff. So like there's lonely hearts columns.
Like in your case, it's taboo. Not to- Thanks.
But you might want to work on that. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. So it just wasn't a great idea for a woman to even be alone. Like it was a hard time for a woman to even like function being alone.
Mm-hmm.
David Houchin, something. A special collections librarian at the Clarksburg Harrison Library said, quote, I get the impression that these were all women who must have been absolutely desperate. Divorcees, widows. In 1931, it was not that easy to be a woman in the United States trying to function independently.
Oh my gosh. I read something the other day that women could not get credit from a bank in the United States until 1974.
You didn't know that?
No. That's crazy.
Yeah, they had to have a man with them or a man on their account.
There you go. There's your fucking right there. 1974. In the
right. 70s. That's why they couldn't function independently. Like
in the 30s.
Yeah. They had to have men for everything. Mm-hmm. And that's why he was, you know, telling the wife, sign everything into my name. I've got this.
But Georgia Tan didn't. Okay. Anyway, moving on.
Right. But Georgia Tan had powers with her that not this guy, not this powers. Although I wouldn't be shocked. This is we're running the same timelines here.
Maybe she. Never mind.
No. Yeah. Anyway. no. Yeah. Anyway, moving on. So he decided to write to hundreds of women under the alias of Cornelius O. Pearson. And he presented himself as a wealthy businessman that was like just too busy to date in person. He was mailing a letter to anyone who was writing in the Lonely Hearts columns, and he was also writing for himself in the Lonely Hearts columns. He wrote in the Lonely Hearts column, quote, gentleman, 30 years old, wealthy widow worth $150,000, has income from $400 to $3,000 per month, is a civil engineer and very fine looking young man of 38. Writes, my business, quote, enterprises from me, this literally says in this ad, writes, quote, my business enterprises prevent me from making many social friends. I am therefore unable to make the acquaintances of the right kinds of ladies as my properties are located through the Middle West. I believe I will settle there when married, so I do not care where a lady lives. So I would just be willing to settle. That would just be so she would just be willing to settle with me in the Middle West. I am in Elk and Mason, own a beautiful 10-room brick home, completely furnished with everything that would make a good woman happy. My wife would have her own car and plenty of spending money. She would have nothing to do but enjoy herself, but she must be strictly a one-man woman, and I could not tolerate infidelity. I am now living in West Virginia.
Dun, dun, dun. I will not tolerate infidelity.
Yeah.
Even though I'm a shithead.
Right. Even though I'm committing infidelity.
Yeah.
One of the connections he made was a 50-year-old widow named Asta Eicher from the northern suburbs of Chicago. On June 23rd, 1931, he showed up at her house, met her and her kids, 14-year-old Greta, 12-year-old Harry and 9-year-old Annabelle. Just 2 days after he got there, the couple went on a little road trip together. And Elizabeth Abernathy, who was the family nurse. Family nurse. She's a nursing student. Cared for the children up until she received a letter 5 days later saying that, quote, Cornelius, right? His name's not really Cornelius.
Yeah.
Was going to come pick up the children and that they were going to join him and the mother. And when he arrived on July 1st, he spent the night at the home. Then the next day, he sent one of the kids to the bank to withdraw money from Asta's account. Mm. The kid returned empty-handed because of the signature on the check. They were like, we're not writing this money. This does not look like Mrs. Eicher's signature. Mm-hmm. Then he and the children departed. Miss Abernathy was obviously confused and was like, what's going on here? But obviously, as we just discussed, men make the decisions in this time. So who was she to question it?
Oh, my.
Well, yeah, she was like,
he's a man.
She's like, what do I do? Like, I don't feel right about this situation, but this is mom's new boyfriend. He has the say. So,
yeah, I thought she was the nurse, not the
mom. She was.
You said the mom. She said mom's new boyfriend.
He is mom's new boyfriend.
She's the daughter and the nurse.
What?
You said Mrs. Abernathy was questioning.
Yes, but he is their mom's new boyfriend.
Okay.
And so who is Mrs. Abernathy to question his authority in the situation?
Okay.
The new man is like, has the power. The man has the power, right? Like we just learned, we just talked about this. Mm-hmm. So...
You're like, remember 5 seconds ago?
Right. So that's what I'm saying. Miss Abernathy's like questioning it, but like, who is she to question it?
Yeah,
she doesn't have the authority in the situation, although she should have, but she didn't.
Right. She's like, huh, something seems weird.
He told neighbors that were like, what's going on? He was like, oh, we're headed on a family trip to Europe. Hmm. So 3 weeks later, he arrived at the home of Mr. and Mrs. Charles Fleming of Northborough, Massachusetts. He arrived there to meet the object of a long and passionate correspondence.
What happened to those kids?
We're going to get there.
Okay. I'm like, does he just show up with his new girlfriend's kids?
And the girlfriend, you also didn't ask what happened to her.
Well, yeah. Okay.
Mrs. Fleming's sister, Dorothy. So he goes and meets her sister and brother-in-law and then takes away Dorothy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he courted Dorothy Pressler Lemke, who was also looking for love through the Lonely Heart. She was a divorcee. The next morning, Cornelius, quote, and Dorothy stopped by two banks where she withdrew $4,000. Before departing for Iowa, where they were to be married. Along the way, they stopped at the railway station where he shipped off of her stuff. But of course, you know, he didn't ship it to an address in Iowa. He shipped it to West Virginia.
Oh, okay.
And so she was like, kind of, huh?
That's weird.
Yeah.
But who is she to question?
Exactly.
She's just a girl.
Yeah. So at the time, no one noticed that the trunks were not shipped to Iowa, except for, you know, the questioning happening around, but nobody said a word about it.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, they were addressed to Cornelius Pearson in Fairmont, West Virginia. The man that was locally known as Harry Powers went and claimed the trunks several days later.
Hmm.
I know.
How do you keep it all straight?
Right? How do you keep up with all the lies?
Yeah.
On August 26, 1931, when officials in Park Ridge, Illinois, contacted the Clarksburg Police Chief Clarence Duckworth and requested that he go to the local resident, Cornelius O. Pearson, and take him into custody and question him and all that over the disappearance of Asta Eicher and her three children.
Ugh.
The only problem was the Clarksburg police were coming up short. There was no one there named that.
Hmm.
So the police chief turned the name and the description over to City Detective Carl Southern and asked him to track the man down. On a hunch, the detective made a trip to the post office on the corner of 3rd and Pike Street. He learned there that Cornelius O. Pearson had rented a box, but given his home address as 111 Quincy Street, he soon determined that the address of the resident that lived at that place belonged to a Harry Powers, who closely matched the Illinois description of a Cornelius O. Pearson.
So he's not exactly sharp.
Nope.
Yeah.
The arrest was reported in the Clarksburg Telegram newspaper, read with interest. From a really old timey newspaper.
Oh, I get it.
Read with interest by Louise Watson of Nutter Fort. Miss Watson telephones to Harrison County Sheriff Wilford B. Grimm to tell him that the Powers home garage that had just like adjoined the property of one of their friends, the mother, Nellie Bond, at Quietville.
Okay.
So they're like, this home where this woman that we were friends with died, this is the place that's being investigated.
Okay. So he's squatting?
What? No, it's his wife's house.
Oh, okay.
He built the garage. But these people are like, that's our friend's mom.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought you
were that we're friends with that mom. That lady, the lady that passed away, their mom. The lady that died. Yeah. Luella and Eva Bell.
Uh-huh.
Their mom died. These are people that were friends with the mom.
Okay, sorry.
So they're like, what the fuck?
Clearly got confused.
No, sorry. That was also my bad. But they're like, what the fuck? Sheriff Grimm obtained a search warrant for the premises on August 28th. And mind you, they're like telegramming about this. So like, or telegraphing, whatever.
Couple days.
Yeah, it's happening in the newspaper and all this. So people are like learning as it's going down. Right?
Right. But it's unfolding over days. It's not like...
No, it unfolded pretty quickly.
Oh, okay.
Like 3 weeks after they went missing.
Oh.
That like they're starting to investigate.
Well, that's good.
So they sent a warrant out, and I guess any judge at the time would like write a warrant for cops, like just whether it had to do with or not about bootlegging.
Mm-hmm.
So it was under the guise of bootlegging to search the premises on August 28th. Remember, he took the kids on July 1st. This is now August 28th.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's unfolding quickly.
That's like 6 weeks, but.
Okay, sorry.
Me and my math skills. You know, it's like 3 weeks. Beginning of July to the end of August.
Well, they're questioning what happened, and then they're having to put this together.
You were making fun of my math skills, so I'm just firing it back. Teasing.
Well, I don't math either, so. Anyway, all these other police chiefs and blah, 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 all went to the garage on the guise of this search warrant for bootlegging, the Quietville home. They were joined by John Bond, who was a former Elk District constable. He brought a mattock, to unlock the door.
Okay. I don't know what that is, so I can't.
I don't either. Let's look it up really quickly. Versatile digging, chopping, and grubbing tool featuring a long handle and a dual-headed iron head used for breaking, rooting, and trenching. Yeah, so you could open a door with that.
Okay.
Just in case they needed to pry it down. Anyway, they found the four rooms of tile and concrete that had been constructed in the basement of the garage. One of these rooms, they found a bloody footprint. And other signs of violence, including bloody clothing and strands of human hair. A partially burned bank book was retrieved from some ashes near the building. So obviously the family, or like the family, the Miss Abernathy that called, and everyone else whose hopes of finding this family alive are like slowly dwindling. Mm-hmm. And at this point, they don't know anything about Dorothy.
Right.
They just know that they're looking for this one family.
Okay.
Officials called in the Clarksburg Fire Department to assist that. There was like this nearby trench that was dug that was connected to the river. So officials called in the Clarksburg Fire Police Department to assist by pumping out an old nearby well that had been filled with rocks and water. However, the well like had no clues.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, I want them to find them, but by the same token, I don't want them to find them like that.
Yeah. So sad.
Mm-hmm.
So he was handcuffed at this point, guarded. He was brought to the farm again and then showed the bloody footprint that we now know belonged to Harry the son that had been uncovered. Although officials demanded that, like, obviously he's like, where's the bodies? Where are the bodies? He's like, I'm not telling. No, what are you talking about? Nothing's happening here.
I hate this guy.
Yeah. So the news rapidly, obviously, spreading across the area. And by 1 o'clock that afternoon, over 300 people had gathered like around the farm just to watch the chaos go down. And
people do that.
It's so weird.
It's so weird.
Among all the bystanders was a 15-year-old boy who looked at Sheriff Grimm and said, I recently helped Harry dig a ditch from the garage to the creek here. And he was like, fuck. So he immediately like went to his peeps and was like, we need to uncover this ditch.
Mm-hmm.
And when they started uncovering the ditch, then they started smelling things. At the lower end of the ditch, the body of Asta Eicher was uncovered. And the bodies of the children were also recovered about 12 hours after this.
God, that's so terrible.
A crowd of several hundred people gathered outside the Harrison County Jail, where officials were questioning Harry Powers. Again, his name is Harry Powers. This whole time, he changed his name, Harm Drenth, to Herman Drenth, to Harry Powers. Cornelius Joseph Gildow and Cornelius O'Pearson are his aliases, but his name is Harry Powers.
His officially changed name.
I don't know if it was ever officially changed, but people in his actual life knew him as Harry Powers.
Okay.
So the interrogation, but I don't know how hard it was to change your name back then. You could probably just say you changed your name and nothing happens.
Right.
Because like his like reporting says Harry G. Powers, and then underneath it says Cornelius O'Pearson.
Okay.
So one of his aliases, but the alias that he used for this.
Okay.
The interrogation by officials of the Park Ridge Police and the Harrison County Sheriff's Department continued until 4 a.m. the next morning. And he was like, no, I didn't do it. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about. But they're like, dude, we found the fucking bodies on your property. What do you mean you don't know what we're talking about? We found these people that people said you were there. Now you're here. You literally match this description. We literally have like found evidence that this was you, and they're at your house buried.
Right.
What the fuck do you mean?
You picked these people up.
Yeah.
And now they're here dead.
So finally, he confessed to the murder of Asta Eicher and her children.
God, I hate him.
So photographs taken of him in the days immediately following his arrest revealed two black eyes from him having, quote, fallen down the stairs during questioning. But we all know he was beaten, so that's cool. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I feel fine about
it. Yeah, he was probably coerced into saying he fell down the stairs because this guy's such a victim that I'm guessing he would have been like, no, they beat me. And it's like, good.
Right?
I'm glad.
You deserve it.
Yeah, I'm glad the cops kicked your ass.
Yeah,
I'm not for police brutality, except maybe in like a handful of select cases like this. Like, beat this guy's ass. Kick him a little harder.
Yeah, as a general rule.
Right, there's exceptions.
There are exceptions to every rule, and this case is one of them.
Yep. So just when authorities believe that they were finally done, like they don't have to be back on this farm anymore. Well, the case took a twist to them. Not to us. We know that there's another missing person here mm-hmm. at play. Mm-hmm. So another body was located in the Quiet Dell sewer grave. This time it was obviously Dorothy. Mm-hmm. She was identified as a dark-haired, heavy-set woman who appeared to have been buried for about 3 weeks. She had been strangled to death with a belt that was still found twisted around her neck.
God, he's a fucker.
In the ashes of a bonfire behind the building, officials found the charred book of that. Like I said, how they found that book, the bank book. Mm-hmm. It had her name, Dorothy Pressler Lemke, on it. The book had been issued by the Merchant Savings Bank of Worcester, Massachusetts. Worcester authorities confirmed that Mrs. Lemke was missing. The Flemings traveled to Clarksburg to identify her, and they did on the basis of her clothing and her dental work that was done. Mm-hmm. They were like, yeah, that's my sister.
How sad.
And that's like so sad because she like just sent her off thinking this was the love of her life. And then her sister has to come identify her body.
So fucked up.
So this article I read that was really sad saying that the bodies of two lonely women and three fatherless children were found. Like that's like what the article said.
Wow.
I know. It's like, what the fuck? That's so sad. But so I guess sad. That's how they painted things back
Publicity.
Then.
Publicity. Mm-hmm. And a headline grabber.
Yeah.
A grabber headline.
What? Grabbler?
A grabbler.
A grabbler. Authorities also found hundreds of letters that were addressed to Cornelius O. Pearson from the women all over the country from this Lonely Hearts column. Mm-hmm. Each of the women had poured out their hearts to, quote, Connie, who professed his love for them as well. On the basis of the letters, authorities contacted Mrs. Edith D. Simpson, who was 38 and lived in Detroit, who expected him to come marry her in September. She had already purchased her wedding dress and was making arrangements to leave with him. That's just so wild to me.
Yeah, but fortunately for her, that's the biggest thing she's out is her money for her wedding dress.
Yeah, I just can't believe you purchase a wedding dress after just you're not messaging. There's no messaging then. It's no mail. FaceTime. It's snail mail.
Yeah, carrier pigeon.
Literally. So when shown a letter that he had written to Asta Eicher, Mrs. Simpson was amazed to see that it was almost the exact same copy that he had sent her. And then she told the officials, he wrote so beautifully in his letters. His mind was so big and fine. I can't believe he would hurt an insect.
Oh my gosh.
Well, he's a con man.
Yeah, I'm like, snowed much, lady?
Right.
Yeah. It just so happens that
he sucks.
Yeah. That four people are found dead on his property, that we also found letters and we also found X, Y, and Z in the love of his life. And
right.
Yeah. Fuck. Don't be dumb. Don't be dumb.
Mike McClung, again, that historian we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. He said, quote, when they were in there, they found trunks and trunks of clothes, women's clothes, kids' clothes. They found the kids' bank books. They lifted the trap door and went downstairs. They found blood everywhere, a bloody mattress. Huge hunks of hair had been ripped out of somebody's head. Jeez. A bloody ball peen hammer. There's a rope that hangs on the trap door when you open it at just the right height to make it a noose.
Jeez. Did he kill more than just those four? If there are trunks and trunks.
We'll get there.
Okay.
But Asta and her two daughters were strangled to death and beaten also. Mm-hmm. And he killed the boy, Harry, mm-hmm. by hitting him with a hammer. And they found the hammer next to his body.
Wow.
Yeah. So on September 20th, 1931, a lynch mob of about 5,000 people were attempting to take Harry from jail.
Good.
They had to disperse these people with fire hoses and tear gas.
Well, no, I don't agree with that. They should have been like, oh, oops, I don't know. Somehow he escaped.
Yeah, I don't know. But then there would be no justice.
If he gets fucking limb from limb.
Yeah, but they want it in the court system. I don't know. I can agree that our justice system sucks. Don't take away from it. I mean, vigilante justice, yes, but
yeah, court system justice if you know for sure.
But like, then the angry mob were throwing the tear gas back at the cops, and it was this whole ass mess, and the whole district was gassed out for hours.
Yeah, 5,000 people, and they're hucking back and forth tear gas.
Yeah.
Hmm.
These protesters also burned down the garage and were taking pieces of it too, like collectors. Like, okay, that's so weird.
Too much. I don't agree with that.
At that protest, 8 men were arrested.
Arrested only 8
and placed in county jail. The protest that burned down the house.
Oh, okay.
At this point, he was needed to be moved to state prison, obviously, for his own safety, so nobody would kill him in county jail. So he was all crying and moping about Lulu and his sister-in-law, Eva Belle, asking if they were okay and saying that they weren't involved. They didn't know anything about this.
Good.
This was his own private life. And that's true. That's proven. They didn't know. It happened all under their nose, which is really unfortunate that it happened under their nose.
No shit.
But he then was moved to West Virginia State Penitentiary in Moundsville. And the crowd, like, literally didn't leave until it was confirmed that he was locked in that prison. So his 5-day trial began December 7th, 1931, and was held at a local opera house because of the large number of spectators.
Oh, well,
they also didn't have, like, a large courthouse or anything there at this point yet.
Mm-hmm.
Numerous witnesses testified that in his home that they... testified to the evidence, I'm sorry, in his home, like that they saw the hair, they saw the footprint, they saw the trunks of clothes.
They saw the blood. They saw the hammer.
Yes. And that he had been with the victims and that he picked up their luggage. The contractor who built the garage like a year ago was like, yeah, I did that upon his request.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. and Mrs. Charles Fleming identified him as the man who had left the house with Dorothy, claiming to be Cornelius O'Pearson.
Mm-hmm.
The clerk at the Gore Hotel, his name was Truman Parrish. He stated that Mrs. Lemke arrived at the hotel at about 1 a.m. on July 31st. So he's like, yes, they were together there. Also love that he went to the Gore Hotel of all places.
I was not going to say anything. I was letting that slide.
I hit my microphone also. Sorry. I'm trying to stop choking myself out with my hoodie that keeps like falling backwards. And it's
a weighted hoodie.
I love it.
Hoodie.
I was going to say, we're not sponsored though. So no shout outs. if you want to know where it's from, message me. I'm going to be stingy till I get this sponsor.
With our 7 listeners.
Yep.
Okay, 7 hoodies sold is 7 hoodies
gasoline sold. Station operator Theodore Huffer testified that he was in Clarksburg that night and had purchased gasoline from his station. 3 bank officials to the Second National Bank of Uniontown, Pennsylvania, identified Powers as the man who cashed the check. The checks totaling $4,287.21 that were taken out from Dorothy's account.
Mm-hmm. 2 checks, right?
Yeah, that's he went to 2 different banks. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, but 3 officials
mm-hmm.
were there. 3 residents from Quiet Dell swore they had seen him filling up a ditch near the garage between July 30th and August 1st.
Fucking fucker.
He also testified for himself, saying that the rooms under the garage were built for storage items for the grocery store. They have a farm. They run a grocery store. He's like, these were literally just for in-between storage, in-between, you know, harvesting to get to the store. This is just storage for me. Also, obviously not true.
Right. I'm like, also double as a death room. Okay, whatever.
He also said that Cecil Johnson and Charles Rogers, these are just random players in this story.
Okay.
Were acquaintances of Mrs. Lemke, of Dorothy, and that they like strong-armed him into having the checks cashed for them, and that he was just the one doing it, that he was just the one going to the bank with her.
Okay.
It took the jury less than 2 hours to deliberate.
Good.
And on December 12th, 1931, he was sentenced to death for the murder of Dorothy Lemke.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he was sentenced. I couldn't like see exactly, but we know he was sentenced to death regardless, whether it was for all 4 or just her. Like,
was he tried for all 4 at once, you said?
Maybe.
Okay.
Because, well, maybe not, because none of these witnesses are from Illinois.
So there's only 1 trial he didn't get tried for?
I guess maybe not. I don't know. I couldn't find this. Happened a long time ago, though, so I was having a hard time pulling out trials and stuff. All that matters is that he got sentenced to death.
Mm-hmm. I would like it if he would have gotten punished for the other 4, though, especially with 3 kids.
Yeah, well, he did. He got sentenced to death.
Yeah.
He, quote, moved not a muscle as the verdict was read, the Gazette reported, and he joked with police officials who escorted him out of the opera house, quote, you don't have a very good chauffeur today, he told the sheriff when a waiting police car started stalling. And then on his deathbed, he was 39, he wrote a note admitting that there had been other murders, but none of this was ever proved. So on March 18, 1932, he was executed and he refused his final meal. He left behind a 25,000 word manuscript titled True Facts About My Life, proclaiming his innocence, and refused to make a final statement. And it took him 11 minutes of hanging to actually die.
Good.
Yeah. I'm like, good. That sounds like he suffered. If it took 11 minutes, that's good.
Yeah.
He choked hard.
Mm-hmm.
He said to a warden once, quote, I've been convicted for 5. So he must have, yes, then.
Okay.
Been yes. to trial mm-hmm. for all five of them. I don't know. All this stuff was very confusing because it was so, because it's so old. Mm-hmm. I've been convicted for five. So the other 50 won't make a difference.
What a fucker.
So yeah, they think he killed about 50 to 55 people.
Jeez. Well, that makes sense. I guess, well, I said, were there other victims? Because there were trunks. You said trunks, plural.
Right. He just disposed of their bodies along the way instead of taking them back to his property.
Right. But you said there was
because there's also 4 years where he's
meandering around.
Yeah. We only know about certain instances because they were reported. Mm-hmm. He was one of the first U.S. serial killers that we know of and the first serial killer in West Virginia that's been reported, which is kind of funny because you just did the Colorado ones and he's the first West Virginia one. Mm-hmm. At least it's been reported.
Yeah.
Mine
was 1863.
Yeah. Everything I read said that he was the first recorded serial killer in West Virginia. So I doubt that he actually was, but recorded, sure. And in 1931, Time magazine described him as a, quote, fat, beady-eyed, flabby little man. Good. I love it.
Yeah.
We know that Lulu and her sister, Eva Bell, had zero involvement in this case at all.
Good.
And maybe that's why he didn't kill them, because
they were like his beard, if you will.
Well, they had the setup with the grocery store, mm-hmm. the farm. Mm-hmm. The it house, was good for them. It was garage. Good. It was good for him. Mm-hmm. That or they didn't actually sign those papers. Mm-hmm. And so what would he have gotten out of it if he didn't kill them or if he did kill them without them signing them, the papers?
Yeah.
So they were his instruments in mm-hmm. this case. So he needed to take advantage of their resources. And a report called The Literature of the American Serial Killer, written in 1988, researcher Patterson Smith said that he had an original letter written by Harry Powers to one of his potential matches. In it, he said he was, quote, longing for someone to take his former wife's place in his heart. And he promised to give his next gal anything within reason that money can buy. He also claimed he was 5'7" with clear blue eyes and medium dark hair. His execution order, kept on record at the West Virginia Division of History and Culture, says he was just over 5'3", weighed 187 pounds, was gray at his temple, and had a ruddy complexion. Yeah, ruddy complexion. Various media that covered his trial and his execution described him as everything from small, pudgy, and pig-eyed to twitching and bland.
Good.
Yeah, it's just kind of funny.
Right. I mean, I don't get behind body shaming, except now.
Right. I'm like, I love it in this case.
Yeah.
I don't dig body shaming either, but in his case, good.
Right.
That's why I said, I don't understand it. Any insult
you can add to this motherfucker.
Yeah, I don't understand why people were like attracted to him because he was ugly.
Well, because he
presented himself with money and all this shit.
Yeah, because
that's attractive in the Great Depression.
And he was charming in his letters.
Yeah. And he was well written.
Yeah. Like he's painting this picture of himself and I'm this great guy and we've been corresponding and I love you so much and blah, 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 and I'm coming for you. And then he gets there and he's not what they expected. But in their head, he is still this person that wrote all these letters. Like the lady said, oh, no, he would have never. Look at these letters. He could never do something like that.
Yeah.
It's like, no, he's a fucking con man. He absolutely did this.
Yeah.
If you look back in his letters, he also says he's 5'7" with blue eyes.
He ain't.
Right.
So this case is also called the Bluebird. Or Bluebird. I kept saying that. Fuck. Like every time I read it, I was like, the Bluebird. It's so charming. No wonder if it's charming. He was called a Bluebird. No, Bluebeard.
Okay.
Bluebeard. The Bluebeard of Quietdale is like what this case is most commonly referred to.
How come?
So Bluebeard was a legendary king who strangled each wife before moving on to marry again. Hmm. Or another description of a Bluebeard is a character from a folk tale who is a wealthy man who murders his successive wives and is famously known for his blue beard. The term has become a symbol for a man who marries and kills women. So yeah, someone who marries and kills repeatedly.
Instead of like a Black Widow for women.
Uh-huh.
He's a Bluebeard.
Yep, it's a man version of a Black Widow.
Gotcha.
So Eva Bell, we know she just went on to have a very reclusive lifestyle. We don't really know much about her after the fact. We didn't know much about her in the fact, but now we really don't know much about her after right. the fact.
She's like, I'm out.
Lulu, I believe she stayed in the house and she didn't leave it for 25 years. Mm. Like at all. Never left the house for 25 years.
Like out of the house at all?
Like out of the house at all. They just stayed at the farm and at her house for the next 25 years.
Oh, wow.
She died in the hospital when she was 63 in 1957 from malnourishment and Parkinson's.
Aw, that's really sad.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I read something that was like, the recluse of the widow of the Bluebeard murders, whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The mob knew she didn't do anything. So they just burned down the garage and not the house. Like, they didn't touch the house. They didn't fuck with her at all. Mm-hmm. They only fucked with him.
Okay.
And his things, in his possession. Like, he loved that garage. Like, he designed that garage, like, to everything he wanted it to be.
Yeah, to be his fucking murder cave.
Right.
Murder
the man soundproof cave. Rooms in the right. basement.
Huh. No, it's just for storage.
Right. Because these apples scream loud.
Literally. I was just going to say, because these peaches,
they're real loud. They carry loud. On. Yeah. So doctors that have studied him don't believe that he was insane, but that he had borderline personality disorder. They also said he is a sociopathic personality, as shown by his reclusive nature, wanderings, extreme restlessness, and inability to understand him and his sex life.
Okay. I could have lived without that last line.
Well, that's it. That's all I have.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Sex life.
Him and his sex life.
Yeah, by himself. All
right. Like, him and his sex life.
That is right.
Yeah, that's our case. That's the Bluebeard, not okay. the Bluebird, the Bluebeard.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah.
I don't. Yeah, that's pretty bad.
It's really bad. I just thought it was kind of, I liked all the hoopla in the beginning of it. That he was like stealing all this shit, just traveling around. And then he gets really bad. Yeah. He goes from bad to worse.
Yeah. He goes from sort of bad to really bad.
Yeah. And like, obviously, we'll never really know how many people he's killed.
That's so fucked up.
Yeah. Oh, where did that go in my notes?
What?
I don't know where that went in my notes. His body is buried. Oh, I just like skipped a whole couple sentences.
So not the end.
Post-script. Yeah. I skipped one bullet point. He was buried in the prison graveyard and Lulu refused to claim his body, which is cool.
Good.
Yeah, I liked it.
As she should have.
I was like, that's good. That's good for her.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Yeah, me neither. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I'll claim it. No. I wonder if that other lady wanted to claim him. The one that thought he couldn't have hurt a fly.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I'm just saying. I'm sure it wasn't really a thing. I just... Somebody who...
Nobody claimed him, I don't think. I think that's why he stayed in the prison graveyard. And that was his request, because he didn't want his body to be tortured after death. And so they, like, honored that, I guess, which is sad. Like, let's torture him away.
Right?
Torture away!
I can get behind it.
Yeah. Spit on his grave, man.
Yep.
Anyway, that's it. For real.
Thank you.
We'll never know what happened, really.
No.
In the case of other people, I'm sure he did, though, because he was on the move for so long and just probably ditched bodies.
Yeah. And it's the time, too, that nobody... And the Great Depression, a lot of people were moving from here, there, and everywhere.
And murdered.
Yeah. Murdered, homelessness.
There's lots of transient.
Lots of transients. Yeah. And so, if your family member disappeared... Well, the only thing with that, though, is that he was preying on the wealthy, but maybe not in the beginning. I don't know. I'm just fucking spitballing here about shit I don't know about, so I'll stop.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know. It's all bad.
It's all bad.
It's all really bad. Murder's bad. Don't do murder.
Nope, don't do that.
All right. You can follow us on Instagram at That's Disturbing Podcast. And if you click on the link tree, you can get to our Facebook from there. You can get to our YouTube from there. You can get to our Gmail from there. We love case requests. Send us a case request either there or on our Gmail, or leave it in the comment section somewhere and hopefully we see it. We're kind of bad about that, but we're trying.
We're doing better.
We're doing way better, actually, like so much better. Hopefully very soon we'll have a book review.
Oh, yeah.
Well, okay. Here's the thing. I want to read that book really bad. I like reading a lot, but I read a lot for school that just is unpleasurable to read for pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I'm trying to read for joy, I have a really hard time with it. I can't read for joy. It's like, I don't want to fucking read. I want to watch Vanderpump Rules.
Yeah.
And so that's what I do.
I got it.
But I picked up that book the other day, the one that we got asked to review, and hopefully we shall be reviewing it soon.
Hopefully we
look
shall
for it in like the next 2 months, hopefully.
Yeah.
I'll be graduated in the next month. So
I think that's a good goal then.
Yeah, I think so too.
Let's give ourselves a goal of
we'll 2 months
reviewing it by the end of June.
Reviewing it by the end of June. It's a deal.
All right.
Bye-bye.